As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Show hosted by me, Nicole Auerbach. I am joined, as always, by The Athletic senior writer, Chris Vanini. Chris, happy championship week.
Championship week, coaching carousel week. A lot has changed since we last did this podcast. It feels like it's been 10 years.
It has. And like, we're going to get into the coaching carousel and some of the changes, and some of them are going in the happy hour, some of them are going in the rocks. But quickly, I mean, this is interesting that so much has happened so fast, right? I mean, this has to be 99.9% related to the fact that the transfer portal windows are opening, right? That everything seems to be moving quickly.
Yes. By the time you are listening, we're recording this Wednesday night. By the time you're listening, there may have been two or three more coaching hires. These things are going fast. These things used to take months. They're instead taking weeks, or a week, because, you know, first it was the winter dead period 10 years ago that sped things up. Then it was the early signing period. Now you got transfer portal officially technically opening for FBS players on December 5th. So you got to get that new head coach in quick. So these things are popping off fast and filling up fast.
Yeah, they really are. And we will get into those throughout the show. As a reminder, you're probably subscribed to the Andy Staples Show and Friends feed. But if you're not, please do, because you're going to find insight and analysis from our pals, Max Olson, Sam Kahn. You're going to get Ari and Andy's antics, and I'll be doing a picks pod with them this week as well as we pick championship weekend. But anyway, just stay tuned. There's going to be a lot more shows as we get into Selection Sunday and beyond. But before we get into all those shenanigans, I'm excited to bring you today's episode of Power Hour. We will break down everything you need to know in college football in an hour or less. And if you get thirsty while doing so, feel free to grab a cold one. We always start the show with the Power Five. In true Power Hour fashion, we give ourselves about a minute to cover one of the hottest topics in college football before the buzzer sounds, and it is time to move on to the next. I will start number one. Here are the top four heading into championship weekend from the last and, well, the last in-season, technically the penultimate rankings. Number one, Georgia. Number two, Michigan. Number three, TCU. And number four, USC. This is potentially going to be a very straightforward and fairly anticlimactic picks and rankings and seeding for the selection committee if people take care of business this weekend. Obviously, a lot of all eyes will be on USC Utah Friday night because USC needs to win that game. We can have a debate about whether or not we think TCU would be in with a loss, but just to be safe, probably better off just beating Kansas State for a second time this season and punching their ticket. I think the consensus is that Georgia and Michigan are in regardless, but it is very possible that we all go to bed Saturday night and we know which teams are going to be in the college football playoff. So that's the set of four, and that's the order heading into championship weekend. Again, only really the Pac-12 championship and maybe the Big 12 championship are going to impact the four teams that make the playoff.
I think the first year of the CFP, 2014, when Ohio State jumped Baylor and TCU, that's something people always go back to. The reality is, in most years, the top four is pretty easy to pick. There is not controversy. We debate about it all year, but by the end, the job is usually pretty easy for the committee. That may happen again this week if USC and TCU lose. Now, because I said that, they may jinx it, but it also brings up the point, should these teams be penalized for playing in a conference championship game as opposed to Ohio State and maybe Alabama, who are not? I am open to that argument, but sets up some interesting games, games we typically don't watch for these purposes. When's the last time the Pac-12 championship game like really mattered for the playoff? It was probably that year that Utah beat Oregon. Or I'm sorry, Oregon beat Utah to knock the Utes out of it.
Yeah, and again, like the last time that a Pac-12 team made it was the 2016-17 season. So like there was a lot at stake in that game on Friday night, and you're absolutely right. I mean, there's actual meaning in that game. We're going to get into the rankings themselves and also just some of the championship games that we are most interested in later in the show. But I'll let you take it away with number two.
Number two, UAB has officially hired and introduced Trent Dilfer as head coach, introduced on Wednesday afternoon after the news leaked Tuesday night. They were, I've been told they were hoping to keep it till after Thursday because Trent Dilfer's high school team in Tennessee still has to play a state championship game on Thursday. Instead, the news got out. Dilfer told his team in the morning, drove up to UAB, did the press conference, going back to Tennessee to coach the championship game, then coming back up to UAB. This was one of the strangest coaching searches I can remember in a while. A lot of names came in and out. This job's been open since June when Bill Clark stepped down. And some names came up and down, Skip Holtz, Justin Fuente. Eventually, Trent Dilfer basically talked his way into this job because Mark Ingram, the athletic director, just decided to have a phone call with Dilfer one day, was blown away by him, and they kept talking, and now Trent Dilfer is a college head coach. So a lot of reaction to that news. Dilfer admitted Wednesday that he needs to learn how to recruit. That is important, and one way or another, it's at least going to be entertaining with some of the quotes he was given at that press conference.
When was the last time we had a high school coach straight to head coach in FBS? Do you know offhand?
FBS, it was Tony Sanchez at UNLV that from Bishop Gorman. That did not work out very well. Todd Dagey did the same thing in North Texas. Did not work out well. But one that did work out well, not the FBS ranks, but that would be one Deion Sanders, who was a assistant coach at Trinity Christian here in the Dallas area. And now he's maybe becoming a Power 5 head coach pretty soon. So we shall see.
Number three, West Virginia has an athletic director. On Wednesday, the school announced the hire of Ren Baker. He is the athletic director at North Texas, making the jump to West Virginia. Also coinciding with that announcement, the school also put out an announcement saying that Neil Brown is safe. He is going to be the head coach heading into the 2023 season. And if we go all the way back, we've talked a lot on this show and on this feed about West Virginia's decision to fire Shane Lyons, the athletic director who extended Neil Brown and is part of the reason, like Neil Brown has a big buyout. And so it's part of the reason that West Virginia has not been able to move on from him, but also made a change so that Shane Lyons would not hire the next coach or actually ultimately decide whether or not Neil Brown should come back. This is going to be the job for Ren Baker, and he's not going to have to decide in the next like 3 days. So he is going to get into next season to see what that looks like. Chris, were you surprised that Neil Brown is going to get another season, or ultimately just because of the logistics of making an athletic director change, this makes sense?
The whole thing was kind of weird. Like, what, you're going to give Ren Baker a very short amount of time to determine whether or not the athletic department pays a $20 million buyout to Neil Brown?
Well, that is what the initial announcement said.
That's what they said was the plan.
Yeah. They said there will be no changes to the staff until the new athletic director is in place, and it's their job to figure that out. And like, we're in crunch time now. It's November 30th as we're recording this. So you really don't have time to make that decision, which is going to be tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, either way, I do think the way West Virginia finished the season with wins against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State probably saved his job now that we're at this point. If they were, what they finished here, 4, I think they finished 5-7. If they're 3-9 at this point, probably getting fired. But either way, he's back for another year. Neil Brown, he's got one more year to turn it around. Number 4. Hugh Freeze is back in the SEC, hired as Auburn head coach earlier this week. A move that was not surprising. It, you know, from the very beginning, Lane Kiffin and Hugh Freeze's names were most connected to this job by people in the industry. And once the Lane thing didn't happen, he seemed to back out of the job. Everything seemed to turn to Hugh Freeze. Then a weird thing happened. Liberty went out and got plastered by New Mexico State on Saturday. And also, Auburn was apparently doing a deeper background check on Freeze. But he's here. He's got the job. A lot of people, you know, he talked a lot about second chances, forgiveness, all those kinds of things. A lot of people feel he has a lot of other issues and things to apologize for, not just the escort thing that got him fired at Ole Miss. But here he is back in the SEC.
Yeah, and I think that the idea or the tension between, you know, thinking that someone's behavior should be disqualifying from getting a job like this versus, okay, well, he got the job, so now we're going to cover him as the Auburn head coach. You know, that's where a lot of people are. Again, I think it was, you know, a lot of people this week have been uncomfortable with the DMs to a victim of sexual assault who, you know, trying to say that his boss was a really good guy. Like, you just shouldn't be getting involved in something like that. And so we'll see how this goes. You know, one thing that I thought was really disappointing was not making the athletic director available for questions at the introductory press conference. Because if you are going to hire,
that's when you know you're really confident in your hire, when you don't take any questions from the media.
I mean,
about it,
when you know that it's going to be a controversial hire because this person, despite being a very good football coach and despite beating Alabama and Nick Saban multiple times, has not gotten a job like this since the downfall. You know, the questions are really for you. The questions are for you about the vetting process, about what you decided to do with this job and why you did it. And so, you know, that was disappointing. John Cohen, the new athletic director, didn't take questions. And again, like, you're still going to get them. You just didn't do it on the day of. And I know that these introductory press conferences are, you know, a lot of donors come and it's a big celebration, but there is an actual function of, you know, the media asking questions about something. And when there are questions that need to be asked of the person who made the hire, you should take them.
Yeah. And shout out to Tom Green, the reporter down there. I think he was the only one who really asked a poignant question to Freeze at the press conference, who did not get many of those at the debut.
Yeah, that was just disappointing all around. But again, you know, he is the head coach at Auburn. We will continue to cover him. I just think that people should have to answer questions about how they arrive at certain decisions. But there's plenty of time to talk about all of that in the offseason. Hugh Freeze, the Auburn head coach. Number 5, last of the Power 5. The portal is off and running right now, though it's grad transfers because no one else is allowed to enter the portal until December 5th. But there's already been a lot of prominent names. Some of the top names in the portal right now: Michigan quarterback Cade McNamara, Iowa backup quarterback Alex Padilla, Western Michigan running back Sean Tyler. He's had 2,000-yard seasons. Old Dominion running back Blake Watson, and Stanford defensive end linebacker Stephen Heron. So, Chris, I mean, this is something that's going to ramp up. We're going to be watching our colleague Max Olson's Twitter feed. Just basically, I'm sure he's going to be refreshing the portal on the minute as soon as this portal opens up. But, like, it's been fairly chaotic already. It's going to be more chaotic. Like, how do we think this is going to go for the first time with the portal windows?
This is going to be a bananas couple of weeks. And yes, technically the portal opens on the 5th, but this week you've had all the players whose regular seasons are over have announced, hey, I'm going to go in the portal. Like there's nothing else at this point. Technically they're not in, but they're about to be in. And this is where it's a real grab bag of stuff. You've got players at big schools who aren't playing very much. You've got top players at lower schools, group of five schools, FCS schools, who are star players for their teams looking to move up. And this is where that two-way street happens. And if you're one of those non-power five schools or lower power five schools that loses some good players, there's opportunity to get players who are essentially coming down, who maybe played at Alabama or Texas A&M and didn't get playing time and are now looking for somewhere to play. So you're going to have to be extremely active in this. Personnel staff, recruiting staff, they've been on top of this, preparing for this for weeks, for months. And it's really basically free agency, but you just, players got to pick where they go. It's going to be just a crazy few weeks for coaches. I've been talking to a couple of them this week about what they're preparing for. They're setting up visits. They're doing all these other things. It's like a whole new extra signing period before the early signing period.
And it's funny too, Matt Rhule, the new Nebraska coach, obviously he was fired from the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, I'm interested in, he's been out of college football as it's changed. And as we've had the roster construction piece just totally evolve. So, you know, transfer windows weren't there. The portal was there when he was still in college, but again, it's kind of taken on a life of its own. Plus you have NIL and impact and all that stuff. And, you know, when I asked him about this the other day, he was basically saying, like, you know, honestly, like, I've dealt with free agency in the NFL. Like, I've dealt with all of this stuff with a salary cap. Like, this is basically the same thing without a salary cap.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of Matt Rhule, that'll be a good transition. Here we go into our happy hour segment as we talk about things that we think are good or positive in college football. And to me, that hire is one of the topics that I am happiest about this week. I think it makes total sense from the Nebraska side. This is a program that needed someone who can build a program. And I've said this before when we've talked about Lance Leipold and, you know, Chris Kleiman certainly applies too, right? Like, there are certain people you can just hire and they've won at different levels. And I know that it's, you know, it's not Division One or it's not FBS or it's not Power Five, but you just feel good about the way that they do things because they've won everywhere they've been. Matt Rhule has rebuilt multiple programs in situations that are not easy. And we've seen that at Temple since he's been there, about how hard it is to build a winning program at Temple. He walked into Baylor after the scandal. Transfers were leaving the program. I remember we were all like, an East Coast guy? Like a Northeast
They had one commit.
And he stayed.
Yeah, to that class. Yeah.
And people were leaving and fleeing. And, you know, I remember everyone just being so surprised that that was a job he's willing to take, because he was kind of, you know, a rising star at Temple. And you would have thought that he could go somewhere. And to turn that place around, I think we sort of forget where they were, because, you know, we just saw Dave Aranda take Baylor to the Big 12 title game last year, right? Like, Baylor's been relevant again. That was such a hard job to walk into. And so he's done it multiple places. He's done it with different levels of resources and different conferences. So to me, like, that's where I feel good about this from Nebraska's standpoint, is that it's not like it's a blueprint. It's not like something you can copy and do every single place you go, but he knows the right people he wants to have around him. He knows how to, you know, talk to the players who are there, recruit to the future, mesh all of that, play to your strengths, figure these things out. And he has a Big Ten background. So to me, I thought that that was you know, it was a name that was attached to the job a lot, and it's a big name, but it's a builder. And Dave Clawson once said to me, I think it was Dave Clawson, that coaches are either builders or sustainers, right? Like, you know, there's certain coaches who've built and built in a lot of different places. And then there's other coaches who are better at sustaining success, and they're different skill sets. And Matt Rhule's a builder. And so I think that this is the type of stability and the type of, you know, relationship builder and person that they need in charge of that program right now.
First off, we have to admit Matt Rhule right now is the king of getting the bag. You want to know what his last four contracts were? He goes to Baylor. He chose Baylor over Oregon at the time. That's why it was so shocking. 7-year contract at Baylor. Has some success. That turns into he gets an extension. It becomes an 8-year contract at Baylor. He then goes to the Carolina Panthers, where he gets a 7-year contract with a lot of guaranteed money. He gets fired there. Now he's got an 8-year deal with Nebraska, which we don't know what the Panthers' buyout money is, but it is a lot. But currently the end of the Nebraska contract is set to give him something like $12 million a year. This is so much money that he is making through various jobs. So kudos to Matt Rhule for knowing how to do the negotiating game. Rhule, his name was around this job for a bit, and then it kind of wasn't for a while, and then it came back in late, and he gets the job done, and you laid out everything he's done. I know there are people who question, hey, can he succeed in the NIL world? Can he succeed in the transfer world? He didn't really have that when he was last in college. To that, I would say it should make his job easier, because what he did at Temple and Baylor is tear things down and rebuild it back up, and finds the right athletes in high school recruiting and builds it up from there. 2-3 years later, they're really good. Now he doesn't have to wait. Now he can find those guys that are like ready-made players. And Nebraska is ready to go all in on NIL recruiting. Like that is what they want their advantage to be. Like back in the day when they had facilities nobody else had, or they were doing certain training things nobody else had done. They think this can be their advantage to a place that obviously doesn't have a good recruiting base. So I think it's a good fit. It's a win for Nebraska, and it's one of two big hires in the Big Ten West over the week. The other is Wisconsin hiring Luke Fickell from Cincinnati. That was kind of surprising, I think, because, you know, he had taken Cincinnati to the playoff. They were going to the Big 12. It seemed like everything was set up for him to stay there until he wanted to go to maybe Ohio State or the NFL or what have you. But instead he goes to Wisconsin. And I think our colleague Justin Williams wrote some really good stuff about his departure from Cincinnati. And part of that was what I just mentioned with Nebraska, and that is name, image, likeness, and the role that plays in recruiting, and what can be done if you're at a place like Wisconsin, a Big Ten school, with the resources as those top two conferences kind of separate themselves. What do you think about Fickell in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to bring up because – you know, with Cincinnati going to the Big 12 and moving up, I think we've been waiting to see where the separation was going to show up. That, yes, we're still using the phrase Power 5, but we know that the revenue gap is going to grow between the SEC and the Big 10 and then the other three leagues. And I think we've all kind of anticipated that we would see it in coaching, that those leagues would be able to pay more and possibly get better coaches, or, you know, maybe poach assistant coaches and coordinators from those leagues, because it's not necessarily a lateral move. And I think that this is a very interesting example of that. I also think, and you mentioned Justin Williams, he's had great reporting around this. He's made it very clear that Luke Fickell, you know, has missed out on opportunities that maybe he would have liked to pursue because mm-hmm. Cincinnati was continuing to play, right? And last year was a great example of this. They break through, make the college football playoff, which we'd all been waiting, and stars align, everything works out with their schedule, and they're able to do it. And then Notre Dame opens, and some of these jobs that, you know, are dream jobs, right? But you can't pursue them because you'd be bailing on your program. You'd have to leave. And I understand where the schools are coming from. The same thing happened this week, right, with Georgia Tech and Willie Fritz, right? The idea of, okay, well, we're interested in making a hire. We need to do it quickly because early signing period, because the transfer portal windows. But the coach on the other side doesn't want to bail and leave a successful team in the middle of a successful season. And so I think that, you know, Cincinnati loses, is not playing in the AAC championship game. And Justin has also talked about this, about how Luke Fickell changed his approach to this. And he was willing to entertain and have conversations earlier in the season around the regular season finale that maybe he would not have in years past. And I think that's part of it as well. Timing is so important in these things. And, you know, so yes, it's a Big Ten job. It's a place where I think he can be really successful, but it's also timing, that this was the right time and Cincinnati's season ended at the right time for him to be able to do this.
Right. That specific timeline last year, Cincinnati is undefeated. It's the week of championship games when Notre Dame opens. That means Cincinnati that week is playing for a spot in the college football playoff, most likely. And Luke Fickell did not want to talk to Notre Dame. He wanted to focus on his team in such a big moment. So Notre Dame goes and hires Luke Fickell's former assistant and promotes him, Marcus Freeman, to head coach. And you know, he missed out on that opportunity. And this has happened for a lot of coaches who don't want to do that. There are others who have happened different ways. Mike Norvell, you know, officially becomes the Florida State coach right after, you know, they win the American. Lane Kiffin becomes the Ole Miss coach as soon as the Florida Atlantic, you know, championship happens. Actually, Billy Napier last year was named Florida head coach before Louisiana played in its championship game, and Louisiana gave him a big celebratory send-off. That may be the way schools are trying to force it now. I think Georgia Tech wanted to have a deal done with Willie Fritz and announce it, and along with possible money things, it just didn't work out. And yeah, if Cincinnati beats Tulane and they are playing for a championship this week, maybe Fickell doesn't take the Wisconsin job or isn't in that spot. I don't know. That's why these things, these timing things really matter. And as we talked about before, with all of this speeding up and having to happen so much quicker, it really sucks for the players involved to have their coaches elsewhere doing these other things right before they play some of the biggest games of their careers.
All right, one last topic for the happy hour. I know that you are very excited for a couple of these conference championship games. We mentioned a couple of them really not going to have too much of an impact on the college football playoff. The ACC is one. Neither of those teams are going to make the top four. We think Michigan and Georgia could both lose and still make the playoff. So really, you know, a lot of eyeballs in the Pac-12, a lot of eyeballs on the Big 12, but also we've got some Group of Five championship games we've been mentioning. Tulane is hosting the AAC championship game against UCF. The winner will be the Group of Five champion in the New Year's Six Bowl, so they will play in the Cotton Bowl. Chris, which games have you excited?
Well, I want to start with that American championship game. Because of the recent news that you and Stuart Mandel reported that the Rose Bowl may take Penn State over Ohio State, that would likely push Tennessee into the Cotton Bowl. And that means the American championship winner, the Cotton Bowl will either be Tennessee versus UCF, which is Josh Heupel against his former team, or it could be Tennessee versus Tulane, which are the two teams that went undefeated in 1998. So we could replay the 1998 national championship. But that's going to be an interesting game. It's a rematch. UCF won the previous game at Tulane. This is maybe the biggest game in the history of the Tulane program. And now that Willie Fritz is not going to Georgia Tech, that's going to be really fun. I'm interested in the Sun Belt championship game. Troy is a very good team that nobody has talked about this year. I will talk about them again at the end of this podcast. They are hosting the Sun Belt game against Coastal Carolina, where Grayson McCall probably isn't going to play.
It does not sound that way. We actually had Jamie Chadwell on our SiriusXM show earlier on Wednesday, and it sounds like he'd be pleasantly surprised if Grayson McCall is able to play. He hasn't practiced yet, and he basically said that if the game was going to be played now, he would not be available. So, you know, that sucks, though, because he's had such an incredible career at Coastal Carolina, and he's meant so much to that program. So hopefully he's able to go or at least suit up and be part of that game. But if he's not available, you think Troy is the favorite? You think Troy can win this game?
Troy might be the favorite even if he did play. I mean, Troy has been a very good team. They're 10-2 this season. One of those losses was to Mississippi State to open the year, and the other was to Appalachian State on a Hail Mary. And again, I'll talk about Troy in a minute, but they are a very good defensive team. That's going to be an interesting game. You're going to be at the Big Ten championship game. I'm going to be at the Big 12 championship game. So that'll be a lot of fun. I'm also curious, Conference USA, it's UTSA and North Texas, a rematch of a very, very good game from earlier this season that nobody watched because it was on Stadium. But they're expecting maybe like 45,000 people at the Alamo Dome. Very cool environment. If you don't watch many UTSA games, Friday night, CBS Sports Network, check it out.
And I did just check the line, and Troy is heavily favored. So I think that that is impacted by the Grayson McCall uncertainty, but it looks like they're more than a touchdown favorite against Coastal Carolina. And they're also hotter. They've won 9 straight. They haven't lost since mid-September. So there's going to be some interesting games. I'm excited to see them all play out. I think the MAC championship has potential to be pretty exciting as well with Toledo and Ohio. They've both been dealing with some injuries, but that should be a fun one. And the game you're
at. Ohio, by the way, Ohio has not won the MAC since, I think, 1968.
It's the 60s.
Frank Solich got there many times. Curtis Rourke, the player of the year in the MAC, is out for the year. He is not playing. Toledo's quarterback, Daquan Finn, also up in the air. I think that game is noon on Saturday. MAC championship game, big game for Jason Candle, the Toledo coach. It's also a big game for the history of the Ohio Bobcats.
It is, and it's going to be a fun one. So make sure to check that out as you're mixing in all of your, you know, like, again, this is our last Saturday of, like, multiple screen action. I know there will be some days where there's multiple bowl games going, but come on, we can watch all of the championship games. We don't only need to watch the Power Five ones. Okay, time to move on the Rocks. This is the time in the show where we talk it out. We look for friction somewhere in the sport, and we try to help people work through it. This week's Rocky Relationships are really about some of the fired coaches. And, you know, Chris, this is your specialty. This is you know about this stuff as much as anyone. So I want to ask about a couple of specific situations and get your thoughts. And I guess I want to start with a couple of the ones that seem to surprise a lot of people in our industry, and that's UNLV and Western Michigan making coaching changes. You have mentioned that these were on your radar as potential possibilities, but I do think in general they surprise people. Why did those two schools make changes?
They surprised people who were there, at least at UNLV, the people who are in the UNLV program thought they were okay because they improved from 0 wins to 2 wins to 5 wins. But that wasn't enough, good enough, fast enough for the AD, Eric Harper. Marcus Arroyo was the coach there. He lost his first 14 games. He took over in 2020. Very tough year to start your tenure. He starts 0-14, finishes the year 2-2, starts this season 4-1. But then they collapsed down the stretch, had a lot of injuries. They lost 6 straight games, lost to a bad Hawaii team. They rebounded to beat Nevada. They are 5-7 and probably going to a bowl game because there aren't enough bowl-eligible teams. That's also a reason people were kind of surprised. They thought Arroyo might be okay because of that. But the AD said expectations are higher at UNLV, which is notable because UNLV has 2 bowl games since 1995. This is one of the worst programs in the country, but they've got new facilities. They're in Vegas. They think people will be interested in the job. It sounds like they've been leaning on trying to find former head coaches to fill this job. Gary Patterson has been a name that's been out there. So we'll see on that. Western Michigan, you know, Tim Lester was, I think, 37-32. This was his first losing season, 5-7, and he closed with wins against Toledo and Central Michigan. But again, Western Michigan feels like it has higher expectations, and it's kind of fair because PJ Fleck took him to a Cotton Bowl. Like, that was the standard that Tim Lester took over. Tim Lester did okay. He only had the one losing season. He went to, I think, 3 bowl games, but he got a new AD last year, Dan Bartholomew from Oregon State, and Western Michigan looking towards some head coaches and coordinators as well. I think they have their eye on a couple people on the Michigan staff, Sharon Moore, Jay Harbaugh, Mike Hart. This one doesn't seem like they're going to hurry too much. The AD said they want someone in place by early signing day, which is later in December. So Western Michigan, one of the better resource jobs in the MAC, feels like it can do better than 7-6. So that's where those two are. There's a number of other jobs open, Nicole. Which ones are most interesting to you?
Yeah, the ones that are interesting to me, and also I apologize for the squeaking in the background, Red has gotten a pumpkin spice latte toy, and it seems to be the favorite at the moment. So if you can hear it, I apologize. Yes.
Well, one more thing about UNLV I want to mention. Ari Wasserman, if you haven't heard, earlier on this feed a couple days ago, Had his own ideas for the UNLV job. He wants to go all in on Sin City University, NIL money, rambunctious program, and embrace Las Vegas. Ari would take the job at UNLV, but I don't think
he is trying to find a job that will allow him to live in Las Vegas. So that's really what that one is all about. You know, it would be interesting to see Ari as a head coach. You know how they make them take like the NCAA rules tests? I would be very curious to see what Ari's score on a rules test would be. The places that I have questions for you that I'm interested in, I want to ask about Cincinnati, because, you know, we were talking about Luke Fickell going to Wisconsin. Cincinnati is going up to the Power Five. So this is a Power Five opening. You know, I think when you look at, you know, Cincinnati fans, everyone, obviously, like, they're happy that this has been a successful place, but, you know, it's been a stepping stone for a lot of coaches. There's been a lot of successful coaches that have come through, but I think they are looking for someone who is going to stay, who wants to be there long term. What kind of candidates do you think are ultimately going to get the most serious consideration at Cincinnati? And also, just like, what do you make of the job? How good of a job is it? I mean, it feels, you know, from my standpoint, like a place that can really contend in the Big 12 and like would be in a really good position within the conference, which is always really important as people are considering jobs. But what do you make of that opening, which, again, we didn't necessarily anticipate would open?
So the night the job opens, you and I both got on a Zoom with John Cunningham, the AD, and I asked him, I said, what is the criteria you're looking for in a coach? Is it head coaching experience? Is it Ohio connections? And he emphasized recruiting prowess. That is something that's going to be very, very important for this job. They want to obviously continue recruiting Ohio. This is more of a Texas-based conference, the Big 12. So you're probably going to need people on staff who recruit that. UCF is still in your conference, so Florida is something you can recruit as well. So that's where it goes. And that's why a name like Brian Hartline has popped up. As soon as John Cunningham said that, I thought to myself, oh, Brian Hartline is a guy who might fit this job. He's only been coaching for a few years, but he has brought so many five-star players to Ohio State over his handful of years. Just if you look at his recruiter page on 24/7 Sports, it is just insane the amount of talent he's bringing in. So it sounds like he's getting a look. You know, at least he's on the radar there for that place. So that's one that sticks out. Matt Campbell, you know, the Iowa State head coach, he's an Ohio guy. He's from Ohio, played at Mountain Union, coached at Toledo. If he feels like he's hit his ceiling at Iowa State, maybe he gives a look to Cincinnati. It's going to be an interesting job in the Big 12 because the conference now goes from Utah to Texas to Florida to West Virginia and Ohio. Is Cincinnati on too much of an island like West Virginia is, or is there more of a natural recruiting base? They don't have an indoor practice facility, full practice facility. They're in the process of trying to build that. They currently just use a bubble. So there are some things that need to be improved there, but it should be a pretty good job. I mean, the last five coaches who coached at Cincinnati either became a Power Five head coach or a United States senator afterwards. So I think that's a pretty good track record.
Yeah, although does anyone really want to be a senator right now? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm interested in Stanford as well. I think that's one, in part because David Shaw essentially resigned in the middle of the night. But I just feel like people are not talking about that job. And maybe it's also because people wonder if Stanford can win and be successful in this iteration of college football where it is in 2022. How good a job is Stanford? I guess that's my big question. Like, how attractive is this job?
Look, our colleague Stuart Mandel wrote a really good story right after David Shaw stepped down and basically chronicled the downfall of Stanford football. Basically, they lost some of their really good coaches like Mike Bloomgren and some others. And they had to fire the strength coach Shannon Turley. And things just really changed in that program. They had four terrible seasons the last few years. I know David Shaw said he made this decision basically right after Thanksgiving, but I can tell you that people in the coaching community for weeks had been talking about the possibility that David Shaw was going to step down. He was not going to be fired, but there was a pretty good chance he was going to step down and hand this off to somebody else. So that's ended up being what happened. It's a tough job. David Shaw was somebody who was very against the early signing period when that came out because kids who go play football for Stanford need to know if they're going to get into Stanford, and they don't know if they're going to get into Stanford until like December. And so that has hurt Stanford recruiting, although they still recruited pretty well. And then you throw in transfers and NIL, and Stanford's just not in that game because, again, the university has very strict requirements for a student to transfer to Stanford. And then there's not much of an NIL presence. David Shaw said afterward that, he's talked with the school about it. They're trying to do more about it. So there are just a lot of natural limitations to this job. As for some of the possible names, Greg Roman, the former assistant there, he's now the offense coordinator with the Ravens. He has been contacted. Vic Fangio, who was a defense coordinator there back in the day, has also been in the mix. Bronco Mendenhall, a name to watch potentially here. Troy Taylor, the head coach at Sacramento State. It's a really limiting job for a lot of those things we just talked about. And if the school can't change, if the program won't adapt, if it's going to stick to what Stanford academics are, which is perfectly, understandable, it's Stanford, but that's going to limit, what the football program can do.
It's going to be a very interesting one to watch. And again, a lot of these jobs are filling really quickly because of the transfer portal windows opening. So we'll probably get some resolution on a number of these jobs and some of the ones we haven't hit on in the group of five as well. Chris, before we go, I want to do a last call. This is the part of the show where it's essentially cheers or jeers. You can, we can rant, we can rave, we can cheers and celebrate something, but it's really whatever we might do at a bar as the bar is closing, get one last round. What do we want to take that shot to? And my last call is a bit of a rant. It's jeers. It's for the in-season CFP rankings releases. We're done with them, thankfully. There are five of them, and we finished them. And I've got to tell you, every time we get to the end, I just get so frustrated that we did the whole experience. I mean, I know why we do it. It's a made-for-TV TV show. And it sparks conversation, it gets debates going, gets us all talking about the playoff, and we do mock brackets and all of these things. I get the value. We've seen the viewership, we know people care. But it is such a frustrating process because you have a committee chair, and this year it's Boo Corrigan, who is trying to justify all sorts of moves that don't really make a lot of sense. And we've seen them adjust and change things and flip the order of, let's say, Utah and Washington. We've seen teams that are the head-to-head result right there, and they're right ranked above each other, Alabama and Tennessee.
And NC State and North Carolina.
Yeah, there's reasons to justify things. Like, you could just say, listen, we know Tennessee blew out Vanderbilt, but we just don't think this is the same team without Hendon Hooker. All their big wins happened with Hendon Hooker. Fine. Tennessee fans will still be frustrated with it, but that's a fine explanation. Problem is, you have to do these rankings every single week, and then you say stuff that you're not really supposed to. Like, you say stuff like, well, we didn't really see any reason to move Georgia from the number one spot. You're supposed to start from scratch every single time you do this. I understand that it's not really how this works, because it ultimately, when you're doing something weekly, it feels like a poll. It feels like you're sliding people up and sliding people down based on results. You try to change the order of Utah and Washington and then tell us it's because Washington lost to Arizona State, which happened weeks ago as the
October 8th.
So it puts everyone in a bad spot, and then it just loses all credibility. I mean, you get to the end of the season and people just don't have faith in the selection committee. And then we all just say stuff like, I think they're just going to pick the teams that they want. We think, they're going to figure out a way to get Alabama in the mix, even though Alabama has no good wins. Like, it creates an environment where people say that stuff and you can't really hold it against them, because what have we seen? We have seen brand name teams get the benefit of the doubt as at large teams. We have seen, the Ohio State jump TCU and Baylor in year one. We have seen all of these different iterations, and we've heard the committee chairs trying to justify things that they may not personally have voted for, that they may not personally believe. And it's just really frustrating. It just, you lose faith in the process. And I know that these people are putting in a lot of time and energy. It would be so much better, and there would be so much more trust in that selection committee. If you just did it one time at the end, like the college basketball selection committee group does, yes, we talk about snubs and we talk about seeding, but you know what? They only do a full bracket when all of the resumes are complete. You don't have people wondering if teams are going to slide up, slide down, what a conference championship will mean or not mean. You just do it when it's complete. We could do one check-in. Now the basketball March Madness does that too. Whatever, that's fine. But the exercise of doing them every week, or do them every 2 weeks, do a couple of them. It's just, it's exhausting. I've gotten worked up about it. I know it doesn't matter, but I have to schedule my Tuesdays around them, have to watch, have to try to parse through these things. And we end up at the end of them, as we sit here on a Wednesday night recording this, heading into conference championship week, feeling like it was all a waste of time. I feel like I would feel better about the entire process if we had not had any midseason rankings. Like the Alabama-Tennessee thing is a great example of that. Alabama has no good wins. Tennessee has two better wins, including win over Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
And they're ranked right behind them. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Criteria seems to change. The emphasis seems to change. You're dinging TCU for things you're not dinging other teams for. Michigan, yeah, they could have had a case for the number one ranking. Sure. I'm not going to get that worked up about that one. But, like, what matters? We don't know. And so you just get to the end of this, and it just feels like it was all a waste of time.
You sound like someone who is very upset that her Tuesday nights were just ruined this weekend.
Listen, sometimes in season, I need to figure out, like, a show or, you know, a movie or something to just totally disconnect from college football. Something that's the opposite of football, right? And this impacts that. I can't watch. Like, I need to binge, you know, Severance or, you know, I don't know, whatever new shows, White Lotus, something.
White Lotus, yeah.
Yeah, which you have not watched yet, by the way.
I'm behind a White Lotus.
Yeah, you're missing all the memes and all the jokes.
It's because of the playoff rankings, that's why.
There you go. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like when they expand the playoff, let's revisit all of the things around it. Let's figure out what works and what doesn't. And they're not going to change this because viewership is up. I get that. But, man, we got to figure out a different way to do it, at least. Like, people lose...
That point of view.
Yeah, people just lose trust in the process. In the process.
That point about the viewership. Remember that night it was between the two basketball games, the Champions Classic games, and the one when
the Michigan Stadium went
to double overtime?
The most obvious TV show well, event.
Yeah, but the ratings for the rankings in between the basketball games outrated both the basketball games. So it's just it's pretty clear that just it matters. And look, I'm of two minds for this. You know, there's a lot of people who say ban preseason polls. They shouldn't rank them until November or later in the year or whatever. Well, that's what the committee does. You know, you don't have to care about the AP poll or the coaches poll if you don't want to. That's why the committee doesn't do it until the second half of the season. Ultimately, and it's like I said at the beginning of the show, it usually doesn't matter by the end. It's usually very clear who the top four teams are. It's usually very clear who the top group of five teams
are. That's why we shouldn't do it this way. That's why it's my rant.
No, I get it. I get it. You're right. That's why it ultimately doesn't matter, but it does good TV ratings. I tell you, and I tweeted this Tuesday night, this is why a 12-team playoff is going to be fun, because for the most part, it's going to be settled on the field. Whoever wins your conference championship, you're guaranteed a spot in, and the first, you know, three or four wild card spots are probably going to be very easy to figure out. And if we're ultimately debating a three-loss team and a four-loss team and who's going to get snubbed, I don't think people are going to care very much, because you know why? We talk about the NCAA tournament snubs, but we talk about them for like a day, and then we move on, unless you're Greg Sankey who wants to extend the tournament because of that. So it's going to be a lot more refreshing to just deal with that, I think, ultimately, instead of, oh, TCU is undefeated. If they lose their extra game, are they going to miss out a shot at the national championship? I hate that. I hate that being at a conference championship can hurt you. I hate that Alabama won a national championship in a year that it didn't even win its division, didn't even play in its conference championship game. It's just how it goes. So now I ranted about your rant. That wasn't even what I was supposed to have here on Cheers or Jeers. Mine is similar, and it is about the bottom of the rankings, and it is not including UTSA or Troy for some reason. Both these teams are 10-2, are clearly very much improved from what they were at the beginning of the season. Instead, we've got a four-loss NC State in there that lost to Boston College a couple weeks ago, barely beat Virginia Tech. We've got North Carolina in there who just lost to NC State's fourth-string quarterback and Georgia Tech's fourth-string quarterback. Like, Mississippi State's got four losses in there. Texas has four losses. We can't give any extra love to UTSA or Troy. It's been a weird year for the Group of Five in the rankings. Nobody was going to contend for the playoff this year. And the committee basically saved UCF's life last week by keeping them in the top 25 after they lost to Navy. Because as a result, based on the American's tiebreakers, it's the highest ranked team that won its last game, basically, is the rule. So UCF only had to beat USF to get into the championship game. They are in. It's Tulane versus UCF. Winner goes to the Cotton Bowl, which is fine. But UTSA and Troy, the Sun Belt Conference USA, deserve a lot more love. The American has finally gotten its respect from the committee, and it's about to lose three teams. Would be nice to see those other teams get some respect. Frank Harris, the quarterback for UTSA, watch him on Friday night. Watch his receivers. These are some NFL players on this UTSA team. They are very, very good. Watch Troy in the Sun Belt game. A very, very good defensive team. Carlton Marshall is your career FBS tackles leader. John Sumrall, the coach there, he's going to be a future SEC coach. There's really good talent, really good coaching, especially at UTSA and Troy. And I don't like that these teams potentially going to be 11-2 potentially by the end of this weekend, and we will have never seen them in the CFP rankings. Instead, we get some four-loss Power 5 teams in there, and I always hate that. It ultimately doesn't matter for the playoff, obviously, but it matters for perception, it matters for respect, and I don't think we need to be respecting these four-loss teams like that.
Well, and, you know, we got to backload those rankings, so then you can say that these teams at the top have, you know, four top 25 wins or two, three top 25 wins. I mean, it's just the whole thing. We've reached the point in the season where I'm just frustrated with that whole process, obviously. One quick bonus last call rant is you were talking about recognizing the right teams and the right players just because it's important to recognize them. Please, let's do that with the awards too. I mean, like, we need to make sure that some of the right players at the right positions are getting to be finalists for these awards that are position specific. Also for the Heisman, there are a lot of players that I think deserve a trip to New York. And obviously there's one heavy favorite coming into conference championship weekend, and that's Caleb Williams. But you know what? You can make a case that Max Duggan needs to be in New York. You can make a case that Hendon Hooker should be in New York. You can make a case that Bo Nix could be in New York. Michael Penix Jr. There's a lot of different
Michael
players.
Penix Jr. needs to be there.
Michael Penix Jr. Yes. not being a finalist for like a quarterback award. Outrageous. Like, what are we doing? We need to recognize the right players.
I agree. Also, I feel bad for the people at the Ray Guy office. I think they have been bombarded by South Carolina fans this week.
They didn't recognize the right players.
Yeah, Kai Kroger, the punter there, was not a finalist. Shane Beamer quote tweeted my tweet that had the lists. Some fans thought I made the list. I told them I did not. Someone in the replies posted the office number location for the Ray Guy Award, so they probably got a bunch of angry emails.
That's
college football for you.
Recognize the right players. Like, this is the time to do that. And Michael Penix Jr. not being a finalist for the Davy O'Brien was ridiculous. Like, it's
tough. Like, the quarterback awards and the running back awards, there are so many. I wish these awards would have five. Yes. It should be five. Guaranteed five finalists.
It doesn't hurt
Heisman.
It doesn't
all
hurt
these awards.
Anyone. Doesn't hurt anyone to have.
We got 131 teams. Like, there are guys who deserve these spots. And one other player that I wanted to just shout out who's not on any awards, but his career ended. His season ended. I mentioned him once on this podcast before, but Old Dominion linebacker Jason Henderson, he finished with 186 tackles this year, third most ever in a season in FBS, and he battled some injuries. He probably would have broken the record otherwise. He also doesn't have a bowl game to play in, so he would have broken the record otherwise. He had 15.5 tackles per game, nearly broke Luke Kuechly's FBS record. So speaking of players who don't get the recognition, with Old Dominion season over, I just want to give a shout out to Jason Henderson, who was an absolute tackling machine this year.
Okay, I feel like that's enough rants for now. We will save some for next week. Power Hour will be back next week. That will do it for this week's episode. For Chris Vanini, I'm Nicole Auerbach. Thank you for listening and enjoy Championship Weekend. We'll see you next week.